Okay, imagine this. You're right at the absolute peak of your game, hitting a maybe a two-decade high in profitability. You're a leader, top of the market. What do you do next?
Right. Do you just sort of enjoy the success? Maybe coast a little?
Exactly. Or do you have the, let's say, the strategic vision, maybe even the guts, to make a really bold, maybe even disruptive move, something that completely reshapes your future?
It's such a compelling question, isn't it? That tension, celebrating success versus having the foresight to pivot before things actually start to change, that's high stakes decision making right there.
It really is.
And, true strategic thinking often means making those big, sometimes uncomfortable choices when you're actually strong, precisely to lock in that success for the longer term.
That's a great point, and it leads us perfectly into today's deep dive. We're
Yeah.
focusing on DNB ASA today, Norway's biggest financial services group. We've been looking at some pretty detailed investment research, and paints a picture of a bank at a really critical moment, facing exactly that kind of choice.
And the numbers behind it are, well, pretty staggering. DNB just hit a record 17.5% return on equity in 2024. That's outstanding,
Huge number.
driven largely by those soaring interest rates we saw across the Nordic region. But, and here's the twist, those same factors, those tailwinds, they're now definitely turning into headwinds.
Right.
Central banks, including Norway's own Norges Bank, they've started easing, cutting rates. Which means that core profit driver for DNB, their net interest income, it's now facing real pressure.
So our mission today really is to unpack DNB's strategic response to this big shift. We're talking about a massive acquisition, billions involved, designed to fundamentally change their business model, their whole earnings mix.
Yeah, we need to look at the ambition behind it, definitely, but also the risks involved because there are risks.
Absolutely. And figure out what this all means for a company that's not just, a bank, but a real cornerstone of the Norwegian economy. And maybe, just maybe, there are broader lessons here for the whole financial sector.
I think so. And why should you, our listener, care? Well, DND's story isn't just about banking in Norway. It's a fantastic real-world case study. It's about how major companies adapt, how they innovate, how they sometimes gamble on their future when the economic ground is shifting beneath them.
Yeah, whether you're interested in, say, the future of banking or how big corporations handle risk and capital, or maybe you just like a good story about a calculated business bet.
Then this deep dive has got a lot for you. It's packed with insights into how one of Europe's top banks is trying to future-proof itself. It's really a story of ambition, adaptation, and navigating what's clearly an evolving financial world.
Okay, so let's start by really getting a handle on DNB ASA itself. This isn't your average high street bank. We're talking about Norway's financial bedrock here.
That's exactly the right term. DNB is huge. It's Norway's largest financial services group, yes, but it also has that official designation. Systemically important.
Right, and that's not just jargon, is it? It means something quite profound.
It absolutely does. For anyone tracking finance, that label means DND's operations are so deeply integrated into the Norwegian economy, mortgages, business loans, big industry financing, you name it, that its stability is critical for the entire country's financial system.
So if DNB had problems, the whole country would feel it.
Big time. The ripple effects would be massive. It's more than just a bank. It's almost like financial infrastructure for Norway.
And it operates on what they call a universal banking model. What does that mean in practice? Serving everyone.
Pretty much, yeah. From an individual opening their first savings account all the way up to the largest multinational corporations doing complex global deals, it covers the whole spectrum.
How does that break down?
Well, you've got the personal customer segment. That's the foundation. Around 2.4 million people in Norway bank with them. That's a huge chunk of the adult population. And that gives DNB this incredibly stable, low-cost deposit base, super reliable funding for their lending. Then you move up to Corporate Customers Norway, that's serving all the small and medium-sized businesses, the SMEs, offering financing advice, cash management, the works.
Helping them grow.
Exactly. And then at the top, you have large corporates and international. That's where they handle the biggest players, both Norwegian industrial giants and global companies, especially in sectors where DNB has specialist knowledge.
And their market leadership, the numbers are just incredible. They really dominate.
They really do. As of early 2025, think about this. Roughly 29% of retail deposits, about 34% of business customer deposits, and maybe even more strikingly, around 35% of mutual funds in Norway as of May 2024.
That's not just being big, that's real market power, pricing power, economies of scale.
Precisely. It makes it incredibly tough for anyone else to challenge them meaningfully. And this dominance isn't an accident. It's reinforced by their status as a kind of national champion, underlined by the fact that the Norwegian government owns a significant 34% stake.
That government stake is key, isn't it? What are the implications?
Huge implications. It signals systemic importance, yes, but also an implicit backing from the state. For DNB, that translates directly into lower funding costs than many peers because the market sees less risk.
Makes sense.
It also gives them sort of first dibs on major corporate deals and public sector financing projects. It's a powerful competitive advantage, a real moat around their business that's hard for others to cross. They're institutionally embedded.
So understanding that foundation, let's unpack their revenue model. Historically, it's been all about net interest income, NII, right? That core banking profit.
Yeah, NII has been the absolute bedrock for decades. That classic spread, you know, between what they earn on loans and what they pay out on deposits, it's been the engine driving their growth. But, as we hinted, that engine is starting to face some headwinds now.
Right.
But crucially, and this is where the whole strategic pivot comes in, DNB has also been building up other income streams, non-interest income, fees, commissions, stuff that's less tied to interest rate swings.
And that comes from various subsidiaries they own.
Exactly. You've got DNB Markets, that's their investment banking arm, very strong. DNB Asset Management, handling investments. DNB Eiendom, which is actually the country's leading real estate broker.
Wow, number one in real estate too.
Yeah, huge presence there. And DNB Livsforsikring, doing pensions and life insurance. Together, these businesses provide diversified revenues. And the big acquisition we'll get into, Carnegie, is specifically aimed at massively boosting this fee-generating side of things, especially across the whole Nordic region, not just Norway.
What I find really fascinating beyond just Norway is this international niche they've carved out. They're a global leader in specific areas like shipping, offshore industries, energy.
Absolutely. Highly specialized, capital-intensive sectors. They operate in about 20 countries specifically to support these global clients. It shows they're not just big in Norway. They're a go-to bank globally for some really complex industrial projects.
That's smart, playing to their strengths.
It is. Decades of building that expertise allows them to serve huge multinational clients in these niches, offering financing few others can match. It gives them geographic diversification, though obviously it links them to global trade and commodity cycles too. But it's a clever way for a national champion to also be a significant global player without stretching themselves too thin.
So the picture is clear. DNB isn't just any bank. It's this deeply rooted, government-backed powerhouse, traditionally strong revenue model.
Sure.
But as we're about to see, even giants need to evolve, especially when the fundamental economic climate starts to change.
Exactly. And that change is happening right now.
Speaking of change, let's widen the lens now to the whole Nordic banking scene. For a while, it felt like a golden era, didn't it, compared to banks elsewhere. But is that era starting to fade?
That's a really good question. And yeah, the Nordic banking sector, with DNB as a prime example, has been a real standout globally. Very well capitalized, super efficient, really strong asset quality. They've kind of been the gold standard, navigating crises better than many others.
And that profitability surge from 2022 to 2024 was just incredible. Average ROE hitting 16% in 2024 for the big Nordic banks.
Yeah.
That's way higher than U.S. banks or other big European players.
It's exceptional. And the driver, overwhelmingly, it was net interest income, NII. That period of rapidly rising interest rates was just a massive tailwind.
How so?
Well, these banks, especially in the Nordics with lots of variable rate mortgages, could reprice their loans upwards much faster than they had to raise their deposit rates. So that gap, the net interest margin, just widened dramatically. Boom, profits soared. It was almost effortless growth for NII.
But the underlying Norwegian economy has held up pretty well, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Energy exporter status, very low unemployment, stable growth. Sounds pretty good for DNB.
It is a resilient economy, absolutely. Norway's fundamentals are strong. But, and this is the crucial point, the factor that drove that boom, rising rates, is now reversing. Norges Bank started cutting in June 2025.
The headwind arrives.
Exactly. It signals a whole new monetary cycle. And that means inevitable sustained pressure on those net interest margins. So the big question for DNB, and the whole sector really, is how do you adapt when the main profit engine is sputtering? It's a fundamental test.
Okay, so that's the big picture. Golden era fading, central banks shifting gears. What about the other key trends shaping Nordic banking right now beyond just rates?
Well, one massive trend where the Nordics are world leaders is digitalization and efficiency. Take DNB, something like 85% of their retail transactions are digital now.
85%.
Yeah. And that translates directly into having one of the best cost-income ratios around. They're constantly investing in digital services, cybersecurity, fighting financial crime. It's about fundamentally re-engineering how they operate to drive down costs and improve the customer experience.
But even with all that digital strength, they still face pressure from those nimble fintechs and niche players, right?
Yeah.
It's never static.
Never. While the big guys like DNB dominate, you've always got fintechs pushing on price, on user experience, on new services, especially in markets like Sweden, where people are maybe more willing to switch banks. It keeps the incumbents on their toes, no room for complacency. It's like those smaller, faster boats always challenging the super tanker.
And then there's regulation. Always changing. Is it just more paperwork, or are we seeing real shifts in how banks have to operate?
Oh, it's definitely more than just paperwork now. It's foundational. You've got the rollout of Basel III, or CRR3, as it's known in Europe, bringing tougher, more standardized capital rules. But beyond that, there's this huge growing focus on climate risk. Banks now need detailed climate-related financial disclosures, and they have to integrate climate risk deep into their core risk management and stress testing. Regulation is actively reshaping how banks assess risk, allocate capital, and even how they report their impact.
So in this really dynamic competitive field, how does DNB measure up against its main Nordic rivals? We're talking about heavyweights here, Nordea, SEB, Swedbank, Handelsbanken.
DNB consistently performs right at the top of that elite group. If you look at the first 9 months of 2024, they delivered that impressive 17.0% ROE and a super lean 34.3% cost income ratio. That puts them right at the peak of efficiency.
Better than most.
Often best in class on costs, yeah. Profitability was right up there with the other leaders like Nordea and Swedbank. In fact, Euromoney magazine just named DNB the best bank in the Nordics and Baltics for 2025, specifically calling out that superior ROE in 2024 and their amazing capital generation.
That's a pretty big endorsement, and their strategy feels quite distinct compared to the others.
It really does. Nordea is properly pan-Nordic. The Swedish banks are obviously dominant at home with maybe more focused international plays. DNB's approach is unique. Absolute dominance in Norway combined with that global niche leadership in shipping and energy.
And now this new ambition.
Exactly. Now, at the Carnegie deal, they're signaling this aggressive push. They want to use that super strong Norwegian base and capital strength to build a leading pan-Nordic business, specifically in those high-growth fee-generating areas, investment banking, wealth management. It's a very clear, calculated move away from just relying on NII.
And if you look at a table comparing the key metrics, ROE, cost income, CET1 capital, dividend yield, DNB, just looks strong across the board.
It paints a picture of operational strength, definitely. Strong ROE, often best-in-class costs, very strong capital, competitive dividend.
Okay, let's pull this together then. We're seeing this incredibly successful banking sector facing a major cyclical shift. The NII boom is fading. DNB is a top performer within that sector, but even they can't just sit back.
Right, they're not ignoring the changing winds, and all this really sets the scene perfectly for their big strategic gamble, the acquisition we need to really dig into now. It's their attempt to stay ahead of the curve even as the landscape shifts. It feels proactive, not reactive.
Let's dive right into DNB's financial engine room now. Because the story here is fascinating. It's like you said, a golden era hitting its peak, then this deliberate pivot, and what you called a profitability handoff, like passing the baton in a relay race.
That's a great way to put it. And yeah, 2022 to 2024, truly golden years for DNB. Total income jumped massively from about NOK 66 billion in 2022 to over NOK 86 billion in 2024.
Huge jump.
And net profit, even more impressive, up from around NOK 33 billion to a record NOK 45.8 billion in 2024. Just blockbuster numbers.
And the return on equity, that key profitability measure, tells the same story. Climbed from 14.7% in 2022 to that peak of 17.5% in 2024, consistently beating their own target of 14%.
It was an incredible run of outperformance, however, and this is key. The early part of 2025 started to show that normalization we talked about. Q1 and Q2 2025 saw ROE dip slightly to 15.9% and then 15.4%.
Still strong numbers, though, above target.
Oh, absolutely still strong. But it's a clear signal, isn't it? The absolute peak fueled by those rate hikes has likely passed. We're entering a different phase now.
Which brings us squarely to the net interest margin, NIM, the main driver, now clearly fading. Those aggressive rate hikes fueled NII growth. We saw a jump, for instance, from NOK 31.3 billion in the first half of 2024 to NOK 32.6 billion in H1 2025. It was a powerful engine.
And now, the reversal. Q1 2025 saw NII actually fall sequentially, down 1.8% from the previous quarter. Q2 saw another dip, 1.6%. Now, they mentioned things like fewer interest days, lower treasury income, but even with loan growth continuing,
the underlying trend is clear.
Crystal clear. The easy NII expansion is done.
Yes.
With Norges Bank now cutting rates, sustained pressure on NII is not just likely, it's inevitable. It's the critical challenge for DNB and the whole Nordic sector right now. They have to work much harder to protect those margins.
Okay, so NII under pressure. But in sharp contrast, we see fee income and diversification becoming the new star player, the new growth engine. Organically, fee income was already growing nicely, right?
Yeah, solid organic growth. Net commissions and fees went from NOK 10.3 billion in 2022 up to NOK 12.5 billion in 2024. That's a decent upward trend on its own, but then Carnegie happened.
And this is where that profitability handoff really kicks in.
Exactly. This is where it gets really interesting. That organic growth got turbocharged. In Q1 2025, and remember, that only included 1 month of Carnegie's results, DNB's total fees surged by nearly 30% year over year.
Wow, 1 month made that difference.
Huge impact. And even if you strip out Carnegie, the underlying organic fee growth was still a very healthy 15%. So the core was strong, but Carnegie added rocket fuel.
And Q2 2025 showed the full effect.
Bingo. A full quarter with DNB Carnegie on board drove fees up over 27% year over year, reached a record NOK 4.4 billion for the quarter, led mostly by investment banking and asset management fees, exactly what the acquisition was designed to deliver.
So this is a handoff in action. It's like DNB is saying, okay, NII, you've been amazing, carried the team for years, but you're getting tired. We're bringing on this dynamic new player, fee income, powered by Carnegie, to take over.
That's precisely the strategy. The big question, of course, is can this new player be consistently powerful enough to keep the team winning, especially as the old star player, NII, inevitably slows down?
It's a massive strategic bet, and the numbers are already showing its immediate impact. It's
yeah.
A pivotal moment.
Absolutely. It's fundamentally changing the composition of their earnings.
Okay, let's shift gears slightly. Credit loss provisions, asset quality. Amidst all this strategic change, this seems to be an area of real strength for DNB.
Unwavering strength, really. They've kept asset quality incredibly robust. They actually had a net reversal of impairments back in 2022, meaning they recovered more than they provisioned, which is rare and very positive, followed by very low losses in 2024, around NOK 1.2 billion.
And that continued into 2025.
Pretty much. Provisions were NOK 410 million in Q1, NOK 677 million in Q2. But importantly, management stressed these were mainly linked to specific issues in the corporate portfolio, not a sign of broad systemic weakness creeping in. It suggests targeted risk management is working.
And the headline numbers look great, too. 99.3% of loans in the low to moderate risk buckets, stages 1 and 2. And the problem loan ratio, stage 3, super low at just 1.3% as of June 2024.
Yeah, those metrics speak volumes. Disciplined underwriting, a resilient Norwegian economy, and just a fundamentally strong balance sheet. They're operating from a position of real strength on credit quality.
Which must give them confidence to pursue these big strategic moves.
Exactly. It provides significant flexibility.
And what about efficiency and capital? DNB is often cited as best in class here in the Nordics.
They are. That cost-to-income ratio is proof. It improved from 39% in 2022 down to just 35.2% in 2024, well below their target of 40%. Q1 2025 was also strong at 36.1%.
How do they achieve that?
Decades of investment in digitalization and process optimization. When 85% of your retail transactions are digital, you just don't need the same physical footprint or manual processing as more traditional banks. It's a massive competitive edge.
But we did see a tick up in costs in Q2 2025. To 38.8%.
We did, and that's important. That reflects the first full quarter consolidation of Carnegie. Investment banking, advisory work, it's just a higher cost business model, especially on the people side. Plus, there are always integration costs.
Still within target, though.
Still comfortably within their 40% target, yes. But it's definitely a metric to watch closely as the integration unfolds and those expected synergies hopefully kick in.
And capital. That CET1 ratio, the core measure of strength.
Still a fortress. Even after taking the hit from the Carnegie acquisition, their CET1 ratio stood at a very strong 18.3% at the end of Q2 2025.
How does that compare to what regulators expect?
It gives them a massive buffer. It's about 180 basis points, or 1.8 percentage points, above the supervisory expectation of 16.5%. That's a very comfortable cushion.
So that strong capital is what allows them to do these big deals, absorb shocks, pay dividends.
It's their war chest. It underpins everything. Exceptional capital generation and that robust ratio are key strengths.
So let's sum this up for you, our listener. What we're seeing is this deliberate, almost dramatic shift happening inside DNB. The old engine, net interest income, is clearly sputtering sequentially as rates normalize. But this new, potentially faster engine, fee income, is roaring to life, thanks mainly to Carnegie.
The big question for you is, can this new engine be powerful enough and stable enough to keep DNB's overall profitability high? Can they successfully transition from benefiting from a cyclical tailwind to building more diversified structural growth? That's the core of the story right now.
Okay, let's tackle the major changes and, importantly, the significant challenges DNB is facing head on. That interest rate reversal from tailwind to headwind has to be top of the list.
Oh, absolutely. It's a complete paradigm shift. DNB benefited hugely from rising rates between 2022 and 2024. Their ROE soared because, as we said, they could reprice loans faster than deposits. That widened the NIM.
Easy money, relatively speaking.
Relatively, yes. But now, Norges Bank started cutting in June 2025. The cycle has turned. That means inevitable NIM-M compression. Direct, sustained pressure on core profitability. It's the single biggest near-term challenge, no doubt about it. Managing that margin pressure effectively is job number one.
Which leads us right into their biggest bet, their strategic response, the Carnegie acquisition. Announced October 2024, closed March 2025. Around SEK 12 billion. You called it transformational.
Because it is. It's not just buying another business unit. The whole rationale is to fundamentally reshape DNB's earnings profile, to accelerate their growth across the Nordics, not just Norway. And critically, to massively increase the share of income coming from stable capital light fees.
Creating DNB Carnegie.
Exactly. Aiming to be the undisputed Nordic leader in investment banking, securities brokerage, research, wealth management. They're not just adding capabilities. They're trying to build a new powerhouse.
And the projections reflect that ambition.
They do. Expected to boost total fee income by around 29%. And get this, increase income from the Nordic region outside Norway by 45%. That's a huge geographic diversification play, too.
How do they pay for it? And the timing right as rates peaked seems significant.
Financed entirely from their existing capital, which, as we know, was very strong, it did reduce their CET1 ratio by about 120 basis points, a noticeable impact, but manageable given their starting point.
And the timing.
Highly strategic. By doing this deal just as rates were peaking, when their traditional business was generating huge profits and excess capital, they essentially used those profits to buy a hedge against the coming downturn in NII.
Smart. Buying earnings driven by different factors.
Exactly. Buying earnings driven more by M&A volumes, capital markets activity, wealth management trends, things less directly tied to interest rate levels. It's a calculated counter-cyclical diversification move.
Okay, let's not forget the evolving regulatory landscape adding more pressure. Basel III, CRR, the third implementation in Norway in 2025.
Right. And on top of that, specifically for DNB and other Norwegian banks, the Ministry of Finance hiked the minimum average risk weight on residential mortgages from 20% up to 25% effective July 2025.
This doesn't sound like much, 20 to 25%.
But when you apply it across DNB's massive mortgage book, it's estimated to knock another 70 basis points off their CET1 ratio. So it's the acquisition impact plus this regulatory hit happening around the same time.
But even with both those hits, that 18.3% CET1 ratio we mentioned still leaves them with a big buffer, right? 180 basis points over the requirement.
Absolutely. They have plenty of capacity to absorb these hits and still fund growth and return capital. Their capital strength really is a key differentiator here, allowing these bold moves.
Now, here's a really crucial point, maybe introducing some tension. DNB's digital transformation push is ongoing. They're leaders there. But the spank and integration experience looms large, doesn't it?
It looms very large. DNB is investing heavily in digital, no question. But the 2023 integration of Spanken, which was a pure digital bank they acquired, onto DNB's big complex platform. Well, it was messy.
Messy how?
Difficult. Lots of customer complaints, technical glitches, people leaving Spanken because the experience wasn't as smooth as they were used to. It even led to some management changes internally.
So why does that matter now?
Because it highlights, in really stark terms, the execution risk involved in these huge IT and operational integration projects. Spanken was a painful lesson. And it serves as a critical warning sign as they embark on the even more complex integration of Carnegie. This is where assessing management quality gets really interesting.
So the big question for you, our listener, is, can D&B pull off this much more complicated Carnegie integration smoothly, learning the lessons from Spankin, especially when so much is riding on its success?
The market will be watching that execution like a hawk. The Spankin experience is the unavoidable benchmark.
Right. So with those significant changes and challenges front and center, let's look at the opportunities. Where does D&B see growth coming from? What's the strategy moving forward?
Management has been very clear on their priorities. They've set clear financial goals. Keep ROE above 14%, keep that cost-income ratio under 40%, and maintain a CET1 ratio comfortably above the regulatory minimum, currently around 16.6%. These are the anchors.
And growth. Just chasing volume.
No, explicitly profitable growth. They're targeting modest annual loan growth around 3-4% for the next few years, but the emphasis is absolutely on profitability over just getting bigger. Very disciplined.
And the core pillar of the strategy now is?
That shift to fee-based income, dramatically accelerated by Carnegie. That's where they see the future growth engine, creating a more resilient earnings stream, less dependent on those volatile interest rates.
Which brings us back again to D&B Carnegie, clearly positioned as the engine for this fee growth. And the early signs are impressive.
Pretty remarkable, actually. In its very first full quarter, Q2 2025, the combined D&B Carnegie entity apparently ranked number one year-to-date in both Nordic M&A advisory and equity capital markets issuance.
Number one straight out of the gate.
That's what the data suggests. Immediate market leadership. Now, it's early days, but it shows the potential power of the combination.
Explain that flywheel effect you mentioned earlier, the strategic logic behind combining D&B's corporate banking strength with Carnegie's expertise.
Okay, think about it like this. D&B already banks a huge number of Norways and the Nordics, large companies. They handle their day-to-day stuff, loans, cash management, payroll. Deep relationships.
Right, they're already embedded.
Exactly. Now, when one of those companies thinks about a big strategic move, maybe buying another company or raising a lot of capital before, they might have gone to a standalone investment bank. Now, D&B Carnegie can step in with top-tier advice, brokerage, research.
And if the deal needs financing.
D&D provides it seamlessly from its own huge balance sheet, using its low funding cost advantage. It's not just about cross-selling one more product. It's about becoming the indispensable one-stop-shop partner for all their clients' financial needs.
So winning an M&A mandate naturally leads to the financing business for that deal.
Which then strengthens the relationship for the next bond issue or equity offering. It creates this powerful self-reinforcing loop. Makes D&B incredibly sticky.
Makes sense. And it's not just corporate, right? Carnegie boosts wealth management, too.
Significantly, especially in Sweden, where Carnegie had a strong private banking presence. This positions D&B really well to capture a slice of that massive intergenerational wealth transfer that's coming over the next decade or so. It's targeting both the corporate and the high net worth individual markets.
Beyond Carnegie, though, they're still pushing hard on digital banking and tech.
Absolutely. Continuous IT upgrades, data analytics, AI, it's core to staying ahead. They've launched things like a digital investment advisor in their savings app, making advice more accessible. Their customer chatbot is apparently award-winning in Norway.
They're partnering with big tech firms, too.
Yeah, strategic deals with giants like Infosys and TCS to help drive that long-term digital transformation. They know they need to stay at the cutting edge.
And sustainability. Green finance, it seems more than just box ticking for D&B. Yeah. They frame it as a real commercial opportunity.
They do. It's embedded in their strategy. They want to be a key player in financing the transition to a low carbon economy, helping their customers make that shift. It's seen as a business advantage.
Is it just talk or are there numbers?
Oh, there are numbers. By mid-2025, they'd financed or facilitated over NOK 835 billion. That's huge in sustainable projects. They issue green bonds regularly. They're even launching new products like a European defense fund that quickly gathered over NOK 2 billion in assets. They're actively seeking commercial opportunities linked to broader societal shifts.
So connecting this all back for you, our listener, D&B isn't just reacting to falling rates. It's proactively building these new growth engines, Carnegie, digital, sustainability.
Yeah.
It's positioning itself for a different future.
And the success of D&B Carnegie in particular will be absolutely crucial to whether that vision becomes reality. It's a defining new chapter they're trying to write. Very forward-looking, high-stakes stuff.
Okay, let's talk about something crucial for many investors, capital allocation and shareholder returns. How is D&B sharing its success? What can shareholders expect?
This is definitely an area where DNB stands out. They have a very clear, consistent, and quite shareholder-friendly policy. Their long-term goal is to pay out more than 50% of their net profit each year as cash dividends.
More than 50% payout. That's pretty generous.
It is. And crucially, they also state an ambition to increase the actual dividend amount, the nominal dividend per share, every single year. That signals predictability and growth in the income stream, which investors obviously like.
And have they delivered on that? What do the recent payouts look like?
They have. For the 2024 financial year, they paid out NOK 16.75 per share. Based on recent share prices, that gives a trailing dividend yield of over 6.1%. That's very attractive.
And it's been growing.
Significantly. It went from NOK 9.75 back in 2022 up to NOK 16.00 for the 2024 payout declared earlier. Strong growth trajectory.
Is the dividend safe? Well covered by earnings?
Very much so. The dividend cover is around 2.0 times. Meaning their profits are roughly double what they pay out in dividends. That's a very comfortable safety margin and shows management's confidence in future earnings. It suggests the dividend is sustainable.
And dividends aren't the only way they return capital, right? They use share buybacks, too.
Actively. It's a key tool for them, partly because they generate so much capital internally. Sometimes they end up with more capital than they strictly need for regulations or growth. What you might call an inefficiently high CET1 ratio.
So buybacks help manage that excess capital.
Exactly. Returns it to shareholders, optimizes the capital structure. For example, they just got authorization in June 2025 to buy back up to 1% of their outstanding shares. That's expected to use about 0.4 percentage points of their CET1 capital.
And there's that interesting twist with the government's 34% stake.
Yeah.
How do buybacks work with that?
Right. It's unique to DNB. To keep the government's ownership percentage exactly at 34%, they do the buybacks in two parts. They buy a certain number of shares on the open market from regular investors. Then they redeem a proportional number of shares directly from the government at the same average price.
Clever mechanism to maintain that state ownership while still managing capital.
Exactly. It reflects that national champion status while allowing flexibility.
So looking at their overall capital allocation priorities, it seems very balanced. They're funding organic growth.
Yep, supporting that profitable 3-4% annual loan growth target, keeping the core engine healthy.
They're willing to spend big on strategic M&A when it fits.
Clearly, as the Carnegie deal shows. They'll deploy capital aggressively if it accelerates their strategy and diversifies earnings. They're not afraid to be bold.
And a firm commitment to shareholder returns through those dividends and buybacks.
Absolutely. And the key is their really strong capital position allows them to do all three: organic growth, M&A, and shareholder return simultaneously without stretching the balance sheet. That strong, consistent capital generation is a fundamental part of the investment case. It underpins the reliability and attractiveness of those returns for you, the potential investor.
All right, let's get real. No investment is risk-free, and DNB, despite its strengths, faces challenges. Let's dig into the risk assessment. What could genuinely go wrong here, starting with credit risk?
Yeah, crucial to look at the potential downsides. While the overall loan book is diversified, roughly half retail mortgages, half corporate, and asset quality is currently very strong, there are definitely pockets of risk to watch.
Commercial real estate, CRE, always comes up with Nordic banks. It's less than 10% of DNB's total loans, but about 30% of their corporate exposure. That seems significant.
It is a concentration, yes. Now, DNB argues its portfolio is high-quality, good loan-to-values, strong tenants, good cash flow coverage. And they do rigorous stress testing, including climate risk impacts. But CRE is inherently cyclical. Higher rates, shifts in office demand, potential retail struggles, these could lead to corrections. It's definitely a key area analysts focus on for all Nordic banks.
What about oil, gas, offshore? Historically volatile for Norway.
Less of a risk than it used to be for DNB. It's only about 3% of their total exposures now, and they say the credit quality within that slice has improved a lot since the last downturn. Still, it's tied to global commodity prices and trade, so it carries inherent volatility. Their overall risk management framework, overseen by the board, is designed to handle these kinds of concentrated cyclical exposures.
Okay, then there's the big one we keep coming back to, interest rate sensitivity. The party's over, and now comes the hangover.
That's maybe a bit dramatic, but yeah, the dynamic has flipped 180 degrees. DNB benefited massively from rising rates. Now, they are clearly, undeniably, negatively geared to rate cuts. Monetary easing is the single biggest near-term risk to their NII and overall profitability.
So their ability to manage deposit versus loan pricing is key.
Absolutely critical. How well they manage that asset-liability pricing spread as rates fall will directly determine how much their NIM compresses. It's a huge test for them in the coming quarters.
What about operational and regulatory risks? Always present for big banks.
Always. Cybersecurity is a constant battle, requiring huge ongoing investment. Compliance, particularly anti-money laundering, AML, is another high-scrutiny area.
Have there been issues for DNB there?
The Nordic region generally has had some major AML scandals, though DNB wasn't at the epicenter. There were some historical weaknesses flagged years ago relating to Luminor, a bank formed partly from DNB's old Baltic operations concerning transactions before DNB's involvement ended. DNB states they've invested massively in controls since then, but AML remains a significant reputational and regulatory risk for any large international bank. Constant vigilance is required.
And then, maybe the biggest operational risk right now, execution. Integrating Spankin and Carnegie concurrently. We talked about the Spankin problem.
And Carnegie is arguably much, much harder. You're not just merging tech platforms. You're merging fundamentally different business lines, investment banking versus universal banking. You're merging across different countries. And crucially, you're merging very different cultures.
The entrepreneurial Carnegie versus the big bank DNB.
Exactly. That kind of cultural integration is notoriously difficult. Getting it wrong can lead to talent drain, lost synergies, blown budgets. The execution risk on Carnegie, learning from Spankin, is probably the single biggest watch point for management's performance right now.
Finally, macroeconomic sensitivity. DNB's fortunes are tied to Norway's, right?
Intrinsically linked. A serious recession in Norway, a housing market crash, a spike in unemployment that would hit DNB hard across the board. While Carnegie adds some diversification across the Nordics, Norway is still overwhelmingly their core market.
And those global shipping and energy niches add global cycle risk, too.
They do. Exposure to global trade flows and commodity prices.
So, bottom line for you, our listener. DNB is not without significant risks. The changing rate environment is a major headwind. The Carnegie integration is complex and carries real execution risk, especially given the Spankin experience. And their core business remains heavily dependent on the health of the Norwegian economy. These are critical factors to weigh. Okay, so we've looked at the strengths, the big strategic pivot, the risks. How is the market actually pricing all this in? Does the valuation suggest investors see the opportunity, or are they being cautious, maybe even skeptical?
It definitely feels more like caution, maybe even a bit of that wait-and-see skepticism we talked about, if you look at their current valuation multiples compared to where they've traded historically.
Like the price-to-earnings ratio, the P.E.
Yeah, the P.E. ratio is sitting somewhere around 9.1 to 9.3 times earnings, based on estimates around August 2025. That's actually in the lower half of its typical range over the last 5 years, which has swung from maybe 7.7x at the low end up to 14x at the high end. So it's not trading at a premium multiple right now.
What about price-to-book, P.B.? Often seen as more stable for banks.
Right. That's running around 1.5 to 1.6 times their book value per share, which was about NRK 172 as of Q2 2025. Now, a PB of 1.5x to 1.6x is generally seen as pretty reasonable, even appropriate, for a bank consistently generating the kind of mid to high teens return on equity that DNB has been delivering. So it doesn't look particularly stretched on that measure.
How does that compare to its Nordic peers? Is it cheap or expensive relative to them?
Generally, it's pretty much in line with the sector average, maybe slightly below some of its direct Norwegian competitors. But if you use that key framework for banks comparing PB against ROE, DNB's valuation looks consistent with its high profitability relative to its peers. You're paying a fair price for high quality and high returns, essentially.
But a big part of the story, especially for Inco investors, is that dividend yield and the overall shareholder yield.
Absolutely huge. That trailing dividend yield over 6.1% is very attractive in almost any market environment. And when you add in the impact of their share buybacks, the total shareholder yield gets close to 7% or even 8%.
That's a really compelling cash return.
It is. It provides a significant income stream and acts as a kind of downside buffer for investors while they wait to see how this whole strategic pivot plays out. It's a key reason people hold the stock.
But when you look at what the professional analysts are saying, the consensus view seems quite cautious, definitely a show-me stance.
That sums it up perfectly. The average 12-month price target from analysts is actually slightly below where the share price is currently trading. And there's a really wide range in those targets, from maybe NOK 230 on the low end up to NOK 309 on the high end.
That wide range suggests analysts themselves aren't sure.
Exactly. It signals a real divergence of opinion, a lack of strong conviction either way. The overall consensus rating is mostly neutral or hold. It strongly suggests the market is pricing in a significant drop-off from those recent record profits. They're anticipating a big hit to net interest income as rates fall, and they're not yet fully convinced that the fee income from Carnegie will completely make up for it.
So the opportunity here, for you, our listener, is essentially this. If DNB can actually outperform these somewhat muted market expectations, if they can successfully execute the Carnegie integration, transition smoothly to that fee-based model, and keep their ROE sustainably above that 14% target,
then the stock could well be undervalued at current levels. And in the meantime, that high shareholder yield provides you with a solid return while you wait for the strategy to prove itself out.
So it's a fascinating situation. A high-quality bank, great yield, but a real question mark hanging over the future earnings mix. The market wants proof.
It's a classic show-me story, waiting for execution to validate the strategy.
Let's talk about the people driving this. Management quality, corporate governance. Who are the captains steering this ship through such a major transformation?
Well, the team at the top is certainly experienced. The CEO, Kjerstin Braathen, took over in September 2019. She's a real DNB insider. Over 20 years there, former CFO, ran corporate banking. She navigated them through COVID, kept the dividends strong, and she's clearly the driving force behind this Carnegie acquisition, known for being very disciplined on capital.
And the broader team. Is there stability? Good succession planning?
It seems so. For example, when their well-regarded CFO, Ida Lerner, left recently, they quickly promoted Rasmus Figenschou internally. He was running corporate banking in Norway. That suggests a good bench strength and a smooth succession process, which is usually a positive sign.
Okay, experienced leadership. But what about their track record on executing big strategic moves? You mentioned it seems like a mixed bag.
It really is, and this is where investors need to weigh things carefully. On the one hand, you have clear strengths. They've been excellent at financial stewardship, hitting those ROE targets, keeping costs down, managing capital superbly. The strategic vision behind Carnegie, identifying the need to pivot and acting decisively, that looks strong too.
But the weakness.
The Spanken integration in 2023. The operational execution there was, frankly, flawed. Technical problems, customer dissatisfaction, even management changes as a result. It showed that translating strategic vision into smooth operational reality can be challenging, even for a well-run bank.
And this is critical now because the Carnegie integration is arguably much, much tougher.
Far more complex, different business lines, investment banking, brokerage, wealth management, different geographies across the North. And crucially, as we discussed, very different corporate cultures to blend. The entrepreneurial, high-octane Carnegie versus the large, structured DNB.
So this integration becomes the ultimate test for the current management team.
Absolutely pivotal. Their credibility hinges on it. The market will scrutinize every step, synergy delivery, cost control, retaining key Carnegie talent, smoothing out cultural differences. Success here would be a massive validation of Braathen and her team. Failure, or even just a messy, protracted integration, would seriously damage confidence and undermine the whole investment thesis. The stakes are incredibly high.
What about the board? Is the oversight strong? And does that government ownership play a role in governance?
They have a strong board, chaired by Olav Sparva since 2018, with diverse experience. Seems like a comprehensive governance framework is in place, focused on responsible and sustainable practices. And yes, that 34% government stake is a unique governance feature. It provides stability, that implicit backing, and ensures the bank's direction considers national interests too. It's a very stable, if slightly unusual, governance setup.
So the key question for you, the listener, comes back to execution. Can this management team, despite this bank and stumble, successfully navigate what might be the most complex integration in DNB's recent history and deliver on that transformative vision with Carnegie?
Their credibility and probably the share price performance depends heavily on the answer to that question over the next couple of years.
Okay, let's bring this all together as we wrap up our deep dive on DNB ASA. Let's crystallize the key investment questions, boiling it down to the optimistic bull case versus the more cautious bear case. What's the core argument if you're bullish on DNB right now?
The bull case essentially says DNB is a best-in-class European bank. You get not dominant market share in Norway, fantastic efficiency, a rock-solid balance sheet, and it's trading at a reasonable price for that quality, the Carnegie acquisition. Bulls see it as a brilliant strategic move that will successfully pivot the bank to high-margin, capital-light fee income. This will sustain their premium ROE even as interest rates fall. Plus, that high, secure, and growing shareholder yield provides a really strong safety net and income stream.
Makes a compelling case. But what about the bears? What are their main counterarguments and concerns?
The bear case argues those recent record profits were largely a temporary sugar high from the interest rate cycle. They believe the NII decline will be sharp, perhaps sharper than expected, and Carnegie's fee income, which can be more volatile anyway depending on market activity, simply won't be enough to fully offset that decline. A huge part of the bear case is that execution risk on the Carnegie integration pointing directly back to the Spankin problems. They worry about cost overruns, culture clashes, driving away key talent, and ultimately a failure to actually realize those promised synergies. And finally, bears emphasize DNB's fundamental exposure to any potential downturn in the Norwegian economy, especially in sensitive sectors like CRE or energy.
So for you, our listener, wanting to dig deeper, what are the critical questions you should be asking or investigating further? Let's start with Carnegie integration and synergies.
You really want to look for specifics. What are the quantifiable revenue synergy targets management has set? What's the timeline? And crucially, how are they tracking the retention of key personnel from Carnegie? Are there any early signs, good or bad, about how that cultural integration is actually progressing on the ground? That gets to the heart of the execution risk.
And on net interest margin, that core legacy business pressure.
Ask for management's quantitative guidance. What NIM compression are they expecting for the rest of 2025 and into 2026? How much of the recent NII boom do they think was purely cyclical versus structural? Getting clarity here is vital for understanding the earnings outlook.
What about digging into asset quality, especially in those cyclical portfolios like CRE?
Yeah, try to find details on the loan-to-value ratios, the debt service coverage ratios within their CRE book, particularly office and retail. Ask about the latest stress test results. How does CRE shipping offshore perform under a severe recession scenario in their models? That tells you about resilience.
And on capital returns, can they keep up the buybacks given the hits to capital?
Good question. Will DNB maintain the current buyback pace next year, or will they prioritize rebuilding that CET1 buffer first after the Carnegie and mortgage risk weight impacts? Their answer signals their confidence and future capital strategy.
And looking ahead, what key metrics should we all be monitoring closely to track DNB's progress?
Number one has to be net commissions and fees as a percentage of total revenue. That's the direct measure of whether the pivot is working. Then the cost income ratio, is it staying below 40% despite integration costs? Is operating leverage improving?
Also, return on equity, ROE.
Can it stay sustainably above that 14% target as NII normalizes? And the CET1 ratio itself, watching that capital buffer and their capacity for future returns or deals. And finally, keep an eye on the Stage 3 loan ratio, the non-performing loans, overall, and specifically for CRE and energy, as an early warning sign of any credit stress.
And just for quick reference, potential positive catalysts could be stronger than expected fee growth from Carnegie showing up in the numbers, maybe a new big buyback program announced, or just a Norwegian economy proving more resilient than feared a soft landing.
Conversely, the big risks to watch for are a messy, costly Carnegie integration, a faster or deeper NII decline than expected, a sharp downturn in Norwegian housing, or CRE, or less likely, perhaps, any unexpected negative news surfacing about historical compliance issues.
So to wrap it all up, DNB ASA really does stand at a fascinating crossroads. It's this rock-solid, incredibly profitable institution, a true national champion in Norway. But it's deliberately, consciously, stepping outside its traditional comfort zone.
Making this massive calculated bet on a new growth engine, DNB Carnegie, to secure its future in a changing world.
And the market, it's watching intently, holding back full judgment for now, adopting that show-me stance, waiting to see if this huge strategic pivot, especially the complex Carnegie integration, can genuinely deliver sustainable high returns now that the tailwind of peak interest rates is gone.
It really is a moment of profound transformation for DNB. A test of strategy, execution, and leadership.
And you know, this deep dive into DNB's story really highlights a broader truth. Even the most established, most successful companies have to constantly innovate, adapt, maybe even take big risks to survive and thrive over the long haul. For DNB, the question isn't if the financial landscape is changing. It clearly is. The question is how successfully they can navigate that change and reshape their own destiny.
So maybe a final thought for you, our listener. What does DNB's ambitious, slightly risky move tell us about the future of traditional banking in general? And perhaps more personally, what lessons can you draw from their story about navigating fundamental change, about making bold strategic choices, maybe even contemplating a pivot when you're seemingly at the top of your own game? Something to think about.